Rachel, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hi, Tess. How are you? How's Australia?
Yes, we're going very well. A little bit rainy down here. How is it over in the States?
It's very snowy here.
Oh, yeah. I think you win that one. So just to kick off with, why do you think that Dr. Google has become increasingly prominent over traditional medical sources like seeing doctors?
Well, I think it's just mainly because it's convenient. And, you know, most people now walk around with the internet in their pocket. If you're time poor or you want some discretion and you're a little bit concerned about going to see a stranger and, you know, downloading your health advice to them, you can sort of nip into the toilets at work at lunchtime and do a quick search, you know, put some symptoms in and see what's there. So, people find it easy to access, and it's cheap and it's, you know, discreet. And, people do it because if they, don't have time to go to the doctor, it's easy to just go to the internet.
And so this is not the only self-diagnosis tool, I mean, in mainstream media. I mean, there's people like Dr. Oz running around on TV. How does Google compare to other sources of information?
Yeah, well, Google has actually really pulled its socks up in the last few months. In fact, they have been monitoring that people search for health advice online, and what they found was that about 1% of their total global searches are people looking for health information. And they've kind of been ignoring it, I suppose, but with the explosion of sort of pseudoscience and inaccurate information on their browser, they kind of decided they were going to do something about it. So what they've done is they've actually teamed up with Harvard Medical School and the Mayo Clinic in the United States, and they've developed a symptom checker now. So if you have the Google app on your smartphone, you can actually go to the Google app and you can type in symptoms, or you can speak them, depending on how sick you are. And it will do an algorithm search and bring you up a list of conditions that it relates to those symptoms. On top of that, it'll bring you up a health card. And this is something that Google introduced into Australia last month. Health cards have been designed in consultation with doctors. They describe 900 different diseases, from things like flu to measles to the common cold. And they'll pop up on the right-hand side of your browser, and they're really actually quite good because they have three tabs that describe the disease itself and the symptoms that are related to it, the treatment that they recommend, and then some other information about your state of infectiousness. Do you need to see a doctor straight away? All with the caveat of, please do not use this as a replacement to see a face-to-face doctor. But they've started doing the health cards in Australia in the last month, and they're really trying to filter their information to avoid people landing on sites like something that's come from, you know, a celebrity who doesn't have any medical qualifications. And, you know, very well could mislead you, but may even cause you harm if you, say, avoid seeing a doctor or getting, you know, conventional medical treatment. So, yeah, they've just decided that they need to do something about this, because it doesn't matter how many times you say to people, don't Google your symptoms, people are going to do it. So they may as well do something about it.
And so you did mention the sites run by celebrities, amongst other things there. I mean, you were listing off some of the better ones there before, but in the grand scheme of things, do you think that there are more trustworthy sites out there as opposed to celebrity-run, maybe less trustworthy sites?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have a clue, but, you know, I guess the issue really is which ones come up on page one, right? Because we have evidence that shows that, for example, with Google, something like 2/3 of the population use Google as opposed to any of the other browsers. And most people don't look past page one, right? So 90% of us will pick up a result on page one and we don't go any further. So if you have a website that's full of nonsense and, you know, information that is not scientifically valid, but you can get it onto page one, people are going to look at it. And there is a very big site, probably the biggest one in the world, called naturalnews.com. Mm. And that has a lot of just conspiracy theories and spurious information and scary stuff too, where it tells you that vaccines are going to, you know, cause all these diseases in you. And you know, if people read that stuff, that can really cause harm. And that's where the problem is, I think, is if it's coming up on page one, that's where people are going to see that information.
And how dangerous are sites like the Natural News site? And I'm sure there is hundreds of thousands of other sites preaching similar messages out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the ones that would be more heinous, I guess, would be ones that recommend that you don't seek conventional treatments for cancer. So there is a particular type of paste called black scales, which is basically a paste that will burn your skin. And so if you go to Google, you'll find sites that say, look, don't go and get your, you know, cancers checked or cut out or anything. Just stick this, like, paste on, and it'll basically burn a hole in your face.
Ew.
It'll remove your cancer, but you'll end up with a hole in your face and probably not remove the cancer. And then, you know, the hot topic in Australia right now is vaccination because of the comments that have been made by Pauline Hanson. And there's plenty of sites online that will give you misleading information about the safety or the efficacy of vaccines. Some of those will come up on page one. And, you know, the potential for that is that kids can get really sick if they get exposed to vaccine-preventable diseases, and kids can die. And that has happened in Australia. We've had children pass away from pertussis or whooping cough. We've had kids, you know, we've got an outbreak of measles running around Australia right now. So, you know, this stuff is not benign necessarily. And, you know, the other thing is, even if you don't get a treatment that directly harms you, if you delay seeking evidence-based scientific treatment, then your disease can actually progress to the point where it can't be treated anymore, and cancer is one of those things. So, yeah, this is something that Google is very aware of, and they're really trying to fix. But as I say, they absolutely advise you that this does not replace a face-to-face consultation with a qualified medical practitioner. It's just a guide. And it maybe might, you know, make you feel a little bit better for a while if you can actually look at some of the, you know, things wrong with you. Or it could send you into a spiral of paranoia and, you know, hypochondria. So that's the other aspect.
I think a lot of people may be heading into that point fairly quickly as well. It does sound really brutal. Just before I do let you go, Rachel, though, obviously this isn't going away anytime soon. Where do you see the future of Dr. Google heading?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I don't really understand all the search engine optimization stuff that they're talking about. But basically Google has what they call a knowledge tree surrounding certain searches, and that knowledge tree kind of will aggregate links that will then be sent to you when you search for something. And they're always tweaking that knowledge tree. And one of the things they're saying they're going to do with this symptom checker, for example, is they're going to start asking you to provide feedback. So they're going to be fine-tuning it by getting their users to say, okay, I put in that I had a cold and you said I've got, you know, yellow fever. And that can't be right because I didn't go to a place that has yellow fever. So they are going to be improving this. I think it's going to get better. It still does not replace seeing a GP, you know, and it doesn't replace the fact, too, that you might not even notice you have symptoms, you know. Sometimes people can walk around with a mineral deficiency or a vitamin deficiency and not even realize. And so, you know, you still need to see a qualified doctor in the end. But this, you know, it can work in conjunction with your doctor. Maybe you can find some information you can take to them and they can say, well, I didn't think of that. Let's have a look into it. Or they can say, don't be silly, you're an idiot.
And I think that is definitely the takeaway message from this. Medical doctors, face-to-face, definitely the way to go.
Absolutely.
Rachel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tess. Thanks. Nice to talk to you.
You too.